meeting, Let's Get Serious, was fomented by the October 19th disturbance in the crash of the stock market, or what they call it, a serious readjustment. Subsequent activities in the economic world have not made us feel any more secure than we are going to be in a bullish situation. So consequently, we feel that with our tools, with our ability technically to win at the track, to make a living at the track, to augment a possibly depreciated income at the track, it's time for us to start knocking off some of the BS and the crap that people are putting upon themselves, keeping them from winning, and get down to the basics to make sure that everybody is actually winning money. The biggest problem that has arisen in the minds of people is in the minds of people. People are skirting around their winners, they're skirting around the readouts which point to their winners, and they're taking third choices and fourth choices. They're failing to make bets on third choices that go off at 4-1 or 9-2 or 5-1 or whatever you designate, or better, failing to maximize what their readouts show them. Most people are picking correct pace lines. Most people don't have that problem anymore. Most people are merely functioning at the betting level as if good times were always going to be here, and easy come, easy go, so I lost 100 a day, but I had the horse. Well, it's time for us to get over that, because it can be gotten over, and it can be gotten over by some of the additional tips and hints, things that we're going to impart today. But none of those tips or hints or informational factors that we're going to impart will do anybody any good if they always fly in the face of their readout results. So it's up to you. I can only do so much. And Tom can only do much, and Dick and anybody else is up here. More and more since October 19th, at least one a day, sometimes two a day, people will ask for private appointments. Come, we sit in here, and with then we talk a little bit about handicapping, but in most cases what we're talking about is their inability to make the decision at the window that they made when they put their horse to the computer. Most of it, therefore, relates back to the psychological crap. Because people said in the beginning, oh, geez, do we have to listen in this very class? Spencer Toner would tell me that he'd go to lunch, and he'd say, why does that guy get up there and go through that crap all the time? We don't need that. We want to know who's going to win the fifth race. I have seen more readouts and told you who was going to win the fifth race over here with the horse with bet was not the one that won, because the guy said, well, yeah, but it wasn't as good as those other horses, but gee, it was dropping 20,000. Now, you know that I've always been opposed morally and intellectually to any status of level of class that's based on what a man says the horse is worth today. Just that and that alone has a part in what we're doing. But when it's intelligently applied, as Brohammer applies it, and he does not say, for instance, Brohammer had me, you, and Q on the Sunday after Breeders' Cup, those who were rigidly conforming to what they thought were drops and rises in class said, oh no, we couldn't bet that horse, it was going up two levels. Tom says, Tom had it on his, would have had it on his horses to watch this, but he had it and he bet it. Why? Because four races before it had won at $32,000. You've got to use some sense if you're going to use man-made claiming values as where a horse fits. You've got to use some sense and see what that horse has done and where it really belongs, not where a trainer or an owner decided to put it today. Now, every one of you has gone through, and some have overcome these turmoils and these indecisions and these problems. Nobody has ever gone through more indecision, turmoil, and problems than Virginia Butler. We just got a postcard from her here, from Monaco.
Make a track of Monaco.
I got a race book, that's what I was wondering.
Virginia Butler was a waitress in a well-known Yakima, Washington, if you'll pardon the expression. where the clientele was dominated by horsey people, which is very big in Yakima. It's a cowboy town, so horses dominate, and the racing season there is kind of a furious event. And when she thought she might like to participate in the wagering of horse racing, these trainers, owners, backstretch people, whatever they were, associated with the industry, were telling her, hey baby, these are tips and tips, and they were giving her, telling her how to play the races. And she was trying to use the method, and they were telling, that's a bunch of hogwash, so I'm going to juice this horse today. She came in, you know. She gradually comes up to a point where she thinks she's doing well, and then she gets mad. Everything goes wrong. She burned all of her manuals. She threw her Commodore in the wastebasket. The next day, she goes up, gets it out, and fortunately, the thing was turning up a steel work. She secretly calls Mary and says, don't tell Howard, but I burned all the manuals. Could I get another set? Mary said, we won't tell it. We'll send
it. Somebody told him.
After it was all over, after the crisis was over. So, fade out that scene and fade in a new scene, Yakima skyline, 1985. Now Virginia Butler is assistant manager of the cafe, and she is now giving trainers, these owners, and these backstretch people, she is telling them, and she's giving them advice, and one stable even paid her to tell them where to place their horses, how to place their horses. And now we get a card from her from Monaco. She has quit her job. She's working full time at the races. The owner couldn't do without her, so he got her to come back as a consultant 2 days a week, making as much money as she was making working full time before. That's a success story. Another success story is much closer to us. Here's a man who, long before I knew him, was a handicapper, a good one within the framework of conventional handicap. He found himself doing all the things that you read about in all the conventional handicapping books. You know, you would look at a horse and Abner Crabtree breaks out of the gate in a three-hole and dominates the early speed. And Abner Crabtree's trained by Joe Blow, and he had all that kind of stuff going for him. The hole he came out of was important, and who trained him was important, and who was up in the irons was important, out of the barn of so-and-so, all that kind of stuff. And he was pretty good. He was a Brohammer type, but he did not, he was not, as Brohammer was able to sift out the myth and just go for the reality. But he was that kind of a guy who knew a whole lot about racing. And lo and behold, he thought he was winning because he never kept records. And he thought he knew certain things about himself because he never kept records. And he found out that in the reality, when he faced himself in the mirror one morning, he was not winning. And instead of saying, well, hell, this is no damn good, I'll go on to some other procedure, he started looking at his problem from a perspective of not my subjective ego, but looking at himself as a third person to see where his incongruities were. He found that he was making subjective statistics. Things that he was saying, this is so and this is so, that was a subjective statistic, it was not real. And gradually he faced all of his own personal problems which prevented him from winning, his personal ego, his personal things that we put up which we call resistance to reality. And suddenly one day he woke up and became a steady and consistent winner. Jay, you have a guest. The catbird seat guest here. Someone's going to sit there.
There's a chair back there.
Is there a chair?
Right on the side.
Got one right here.
Okay. And that man has to be with us today. As you know, charter membership in Kirkwood has become increasingly difficult because some of the biggest incomes from peddling our method come not from us, but from former charter members who thought I was stupid in giving this away at such low prices. So they decided, we'll correct that, we'll take it and sell it at a big price. And so they're no longer charter members. So we're very careful in selecting charter members anymore. Only three have done that. It's not a big thing. So we start people off in two categories. Provisional teaching members, those whose teaching abilities are provisional, and if they are able to master that and not let their access to a lot of free material go to their head and decide they want to become merchants as opposed to handicappers, then they become teaching members. Then, if they pass Bob Purdy's social test, this man has demonstrated his ability to overcome this first step, provisional teaching method, and has made a full teaching method. And I'm very proud, knowing what he has gone through to rise to this occasion, to bestow this certificate of teaching membership to Mr. Tom Hamble.
Speech! Speech!
The race was fixed here. This is a big surprise.
Considering you missed a race yesterday too, I don't know if we should allow this or not.
I know. I'm embarrassed. I had a terrible day yesterday. I missed something that if I would have spent some more time, I didn't do the ninth race at home. I just did it at the track real quickly, and I couldn't get the confidence I needed on a particular horse, and I wound up betting the wrong one. But I'm really kind of at a loss for words with this whole thing. When I met Doc 2 years ago, I was betting anywhere from 1 to 4 horses in a race, sprint races at Santa Anita. And I was doing it only on the first call. And this was the latest of a series of things that I'd gone through over a long time that I thought I could win with. And I was actually showing a modest profit, but it was only on the short term. And I tried UltraScan, and I did real well with it. And then I got smart, and I fell on my face because I tried to put all of my old subjective thinking into what the doc and other people have put into with UltraScan. And I went full circle, and I wound up using phase 3. And when I did what I was supposed to do, I was very successful. And when I would get my subjective thinking back into it, I was less than successful. I did a thing with a pretty complete study on the triple last summer. And I still think that if you want to make money, that's the best place to make it in racing. But I'm not quite sure if I want to cut the government in as a full partner just yet, because you're going to make so much, you're going to have to report it. So I played the triple for a little over a month last summer and did very well with it. And fortunately, a guy I've had spent a lot of time with the last year and a half or so, I met at this seminar. Jim Renskowski from Las Vegas has been playing the triple very regularly. And I think he's going to buy a 20-unit apartment building. Seriously, he's done very well with it. And hopefully I've had a little input with his success. I know he's helped me. The thing I like about Perco is that we're here to help each other. You know, we all bring a set of credentials. Both positive and negative, and with each other's help, we can overcome the negative and accentuate the positive. I've learned a lot from a lot of different people. I've spent a lot of time with Tom Brohammer. I've spent a lot of time with Dick Schmidt, the doc, and I always learn something. And sometimes it has a lot to do with horse racing, and sometimes it has a lot to do with me. And I think that's a real positive. A positive expectancy over a long period of time. But I'm real honored with the certificate. It's something I was not expecting, to be honest with you. And when I started here, 2 years ago, and I was about 9 weeks into my Perco membership, and I had done very well at Hollywood Park in the fall, and then I got smart at Santa Anita, and I don't think I hit a race the whole month, it seemed like. And I kept calling the doc and whining and crying, and kept saying, well, you know, that's to be expected. It only takes some people only 6 or 7 weeks before they fall. I says, it took you a little longer. It wasn't too long after that that I just applied UltraScan. Did what the doc told me, applied UltraScan to a Trump card when there was a $600,000 carryover in the pick six. And because I had been losing, I didn't have a whole lot of money. I played a series of 5 pick six tickets for $8 a piece. I hit 5 that day for $8,000. And the interesting part of this little story is that had I believed my UltraScan readout on this cheap horse from some unknown track, but it was a 6-horse field, the horse paid $33, and that was the key to the pick six. There were 8 tickets on the pick five that day. Nobody had this horse. That was the backbreaker, and I didn't either. But he was something like a 1-1-4 under UltraScan. And any horse that has a 1 after his name is dangerous. But this is a good organization, and if you're interested in horse racing, it's all here. Everything you hear at this podium is true. And I have never found a race that if I worked on it long enough, I couldn't figure out how we could have achieved the winner of that race. So these flossy numbers that some of us throw around and everything are reality. When people ask me how I do at the track or somebody I meet or something, if I'm having a particularly strong day or something like that, someone's sitting next to me and they realize they've cashed a lot of tickets, and then what do you do? And they see the computer and all that. They'll ask me, well, how do you do? And I say, I do fine. I don't even bench in the back. But in the short haul, you can hit 80%. In the long haul, you're going to hit 68 to 70%, 65%. You can get rich at 63%. I just found this out. Because you're getting a little higher neutral. It's all here. I mean, I don't have any special qualifications to do what I've done, except I've spent a lot of time with it, and I intend to spend a lot more time in 1988. I need to make some money this year. I think it's not an easy way to make it, but it's there to be made. It's there for all of us. And I want to thank Howard again. It's really an honor.
We want to thank you.
Better than what you can become and what you do become. So if somebody gets kind of a record, that Tom is amassed, it's more important to me that what he overcame to get there than it is that he got there. That should be more important to you. It's more important to me that Dick Schmidt had to make a living at the track and had to started with very, very little knowledge really of horse racing and was able to do it. That's the greatest thing that we can do is to have people overcome the problems we know that everyone faces. Now, there are a lot of you who, whether you're willing to admit it yet or not, here's Ginny's card, a lot of you who someday, unless you're going to be rich all your life from some other source, yes, you do.
Your glass is bouncing on my rack.
Anything's bad. You know how we eat that.
Just like being in Hollywood and having your own makeup, man.
you guys
aren't the only Hollywood.
The scary, you sure, Tom?
Yeah, I will in a minute.
The scary part of this is that he's our technician.
Yeah.
What can I tell you? It's as good as it gets, yes.
I look around and I see faces in every one of these meetings of people that I know who are their own worst enemies, who are purposely, whether they know it or not, there is a voice within them. There's a little voice within them that says, don't win. Screw up. Find a way. Screw up. Now, some of them are defiant. They say, well, I'm going to prove that this damn thing, I'm better than this damn thing, so I'm going to take this horse. Well, there are a lot of reasons they do it, but mostly they do it because they're stubborn, and their stubbornness creates a resistance. They try to say, look, I'm here at all the meetings, I have no resistance. Well, anybody who's been married has heard comparable things to that when having an argument with one's spouse. Like Genghis Khan and Kublai Khan and all those other Khans, and the Russians always would defeat the enemy by having enough ground to just keep retreating, never resisting, just no showing any obvious resistance, but retreating. So those of you who constantly insist upon finding a way to lose are, in effect, resisting by retreat. You're not showing any open hostility or any open resistance. You're resisting by retreat. You're just going back and stubbornly doing what you would have done anyway, but seem to get a kick out of coming to these meetings and meeting with the other guys and having a lot of social fun. But some need to lose to justify our existence. It's more fun to hang out with losers and talk about. It is. It's a great deal. Hey, look, I don't care what Sartre says. They move the damn finish line. That photo thing, you see, it's on an angle. And the photo is wrong. And don't tell me that jockeys don't get together in their little clubhouse and decide who's going to win. And you can't tell me that a big, rich guy like Whittingham and Lucas and those guys don't get together and decide who's going to win this race. And you know, thousands of little things. And don't tell me that God doesn't pay attention. Because God, every time there's a photo, I lose it. It's true. And I got a guy giving me a list of statistics. Every time there was an inquiry, he lost it, and he swore to God it went on for 3 years. I feel sorry for him because I win 90% of my inquiries, so I guess that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah, but you know the story.
That's right. the main thing we're going to do in this session. Yes, sir.
Howard, at the risk of having this sound a little bit like an AA meeting, I'd like to share something with some people here. The only thing I knew about horse racing, at least my initial introduction to it, is through this group. Of course, I've read everything that I could get my hands on, but about, I'll say about 9 months ago, or 6-7 months ago, something like that, when I've been doing well, right throughout on the methodology, when it came to betting real money, I started getting some resistance. Real money for me is like $50 or $100. And I had enough experience at that point that I could honestly say that the errors I was making was not due to my, you know, for the most part, was not due to a lack of understanding of horse racing or the methodology. In other words, I felt I had all that under my belt, at least enough to be successful. I'm still learning. But I really decided, truthfully, that at that point my problem was the psychology of it for me. And that I've borne that out. That is the case. And I've worked a lot. Just coincidentally, I know you started talking to people here about Silva and some things, and I did some explorations in that direction that I'm still following through on. I do see a psychologist once a week, and it's helped me enormously. It really has. You know, I'm making my living at it. I blow at least one or two bets a week fighting against myself. Okay, it's not uncommon. You know, but there isn't a week that goes by that, even despite that, I sort of like I make money in spite of myself. You know what I'm saying? So there, anyone here that's having trouble with the methodology, once you really have given yourself enough time to understand it and all those sorts of things, you know, really start looking inwardly at yourself to see whether or not, you know, there's something going on with you. Because through the instruction here in terms of my models and my record keeping and all these other things, I don't lie to myself. I know exactly what's going on. I know when I blow it, when I don't, when it's because of just racing luck or me, or, you know, what causes me to lose races. And if you're consistently losing, you know, there's something, either you're really not understanding the methodology or you really subconsciously are defeating yourself. Because even defeating myself sometimes, even still having some of these problems, I still win.
That's true.
Well, there is a relation between what we do at AA meetings. Except we reverse the AA coin. A lot of people get turned off when they first hear it. It sounds like a religious revival meeting sometimes. And the purists, the intellectual purists say, hey, this is a mind-bending group. These guys aren't handicapped. But secret of AA, to the degree it has a secret, is the fact that everybody gets up and shares their problem, and they lean on each other's weaknesses, because the fundamental problem of AA is that a man must get up and say, my name is Joe Blow, I am an alcoholic, which is like saying, my name is Joe Blow, I am a loser. And the Gamblers Anonymous, who pattern themselves after A, they do get up and say, my name is Joe Blow, and I am a compulsive gambler, I am a loser. And they go from there, and they say abstinence is the only way you can exist. And then, therefore, they lean on each other to keep themselves abstinence, which makes, of course, the heart grow fonder for what they long for to begin with. Because AA nor GA, neither one of them cures the problem. But if it's a case of AA and tissue damage is going to be done by the imbibement of alcohol, perhaps that is the problem that has to be faced, that you cannot ever become cured of alcoholism once it has reached the point where tissue damage is involved. But for a person who just drinks a little too much and can't handle his liquor and can't turn down one, who is not truly suffering from tissue damage, alcoholism is not a disease, and he does not have to go through that. And especially does a gambler not have to go through that indignity of getting up and telling everybody, I am a loser. So we take the coin of AA and GA and merely turn it around, and our testimonials are, my name is Joe Blow and I am a winner. As two people have done today. You will, if you cluster toward the philosophy and the psychology and the activity of a winner, instead of a loser, as they do in AA and GA, you yourself should become a winner. That is the main purpose of this methodology. It is certainly not in the computer programs. They have been stolen, and you can find them on the market for just a few dollars more than we sell them all over the United States. And yet those people using exactly the same numbers you have don't show any noticeable trend toward becoming winners. Why? Because the secret lies not in the numbers. Those of you who think, or have in the past thought that it does, know now that it doesn't lie in that. It lies in the interpersonal relationship of dedication to what our goal is, which is winning, not becoming a better handicap. This is why, you see, in their lack of wisdom, they have stolen our programs. But no one ever has tried to duplicate the old yellow manual.
Thank the Lord.
Anybody
I tried to read that
yellow
this week,
manual,
just for the hell of it.
Who
confused me more than I could think of.
I will persevere. Those who were chicken didn't. And they're not even...
I had a fellow walk up to the table with me in San Bernardino the other day. I had not done a race, and I was doing it at the table, you know, before the racing started. He had a computer, and he wanted to know all about it, and I said, just gave me your address. I said, go see the doctor. I said, I don't know anything. Well, how much will you charge me to run a program off there? And I said, you gotta be kidding. And I stood up, and I said, you're insulting me. I said, no, there's no price you could give me for that. But people do that. They want to steal you.
Oh, yeah.
I told him, no way.
Yeah, they do.
So he didn't. He left me alone. He left the table.
They do, but you can. You know, it's like stealing someone's purse. You're stealing trash. Because the soul, there's a lot of soul. And the methodology is this heart and soul of dedication. And it's not just it lies in numbers. It's interpretation.
Program by itself doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Everything goes
goes around with it.
I'm glad nobody told Dean Daly and George Caywood and George Green, John Meyer, and a few others I can name that. Because they seem to think that it's all in the numbers. All you got to do is offer the numbers, sell them for a few hundred dollars more than I do, and make them seem like they're better than they really are. You got it, Nate. I want to get into some things today that some of you who might be having problems can use, not only to build yourself a confidence level through the stable or a horses to watch concept, to augment or supplement your present method of play, but to go back over some of the things that we already have and have already done that you may have forgotten. The problem is that people get one manual and they read it, and then another manual comes out on something, and they get to thinking that this makes the first manual obsolete. Oh, here's a new thing. So they say, well, I don't have to remember any of that anymore. That one goes down. This is not true. This manual is to supplement and to augment that which went before. Nothing is obsolete. The only manual we took off the market was the old factor analysis manual. Dick erroneously said we took it off because it was outdated. Actually, it was post-dated. Actually, it was too complex and will appear in various forms in the future. The factor analysis manual was shared some things that had people taking them seriously and did not just use it to make baseline selections, but had put them into the next decade. So it was not taken off the market because it was antiquated, it was taken off the market because it was futuristic. For instance, we said that it was 0.08, generally speaking, per point of variant or per value of a beaten length or per class, because if you'll take, when you see Tom's variant charts that he's going to give out today, his track the percentage of part times, you'll see that at sprints, the delineation between class level, it averages 0.10 and it routes 0.085 just from his part-time chart. So that was perceived a long time ago and it was a down and dirty way to use the racing form daily variant. A lot of things were perceived a long time ago that are just now coming into focus. Another thing that's in the original manual that a lot of people should go back and think about, and Tom Hamilton said it without knowing that we were going to talk about it today, is the fact that the Brohammer model is a subjective model. How many times have you heard Tom say, Dick say, and everybody say, hey, don't ask somebody what their current model is. It's not going to do you any good because the current model that you have is based on your handicap. Granted, to the degree that when your handicapping becomes optimal, your Brohammer model will probably be very comparable to the one that Tom would make himself. Maybe. Probably more comparable to mine or Dick, since Tom doesn't play every race as we do. So it would be on the kinds of races that he specializes in where his model would be the most significant. So I say to some of you who say, my model fit was so-and-so and so-and-so, and he didn't win the race because of his model fit. And everybody around him said, well, geez, that fit my model perfectly. He feels like, what have I done? Where have I gone astray? All it's saying is that his baseline selection is somewhat less sophisticated than the person whose model fit the race perfectly. Now, Logan, if he keeps that semi-erroneous model consistently, he may often win at a big prize a race which the person with a more consistent with what Tom would have model, so he might get his, but he won't get it the same time, deeply up in this peak and somebody else is in this valley. So to correct this problem that you might be having of a model that is erroneous, I would urge you to review the source of the Brohammer model, which is the old line score. Now, everything I say to you guys, ladies, about problems, I'm very conversant with them because I personally had them. I personally had the terrors and the anxieties and the prone to picking if there's three of them, I pick the third one instead of the two that should do it. All those things I've gone through. I know the source of them, know the problem, know how to correct them because they're absolutely universal. Anybody tells me he's never had the problem, I know he's lying to me. They're universal. Daryl and I did this, and we'd have the same problems you're talking about. We'd zig when we shouldn't be zagging. We'd make every possible mistake in the world. They used to have some horses named Martini up in the Bay Area. Dry Martini, wet Martini, Martini Rossi. There were speeds with the horse. Horses bred for early speed in sprints. And by gosh, if Dry Martini was the one that was going to win the race, Daryl would go bet Martini and Rossi, who's still running. Just little things like that by not getting the name right. Or making a second guess on your own things. All these things that you are experiencing or have experienced are very, very near and dear to my heart. What we found when we reviewed thousands of stacks of these things, we had this thing. I think Daryl was the one who got much of these Xerox by the thousands someplace he was working. Daryl would do not only on the fractional times, but on the CompuGraph with pace center early sustained W, he would put a blue line circle if the horse had a one, every one. He put a red for every two, a yellow for every three, and anything over three, just a black pencil. We would go through those after winning a little, losing a little, maybe losing a lot, or whatever we did wrong. We'd go through it, but we noticed how many of the horses who figured in the race, who actually gave us payoffs, who won the race mostly, had a one somewhere in their line score. Then we said, boy, look at all those ones that we ignored the one because the other readouts didn't look so good. Then we started counting the horses with two, and then especially the horses with two twos, and then we counted how strangely often the horses with a three, or a pair of threes at least, and sometimes with three threes, would pay off large mutuals. So the line scores that we developed over 14,000 races, the exact win proficiency of a line score. A lot of people have written me, I don't understand the line scores. Of all the things in the yellow manual that is the most clearly written, it's the line scores. The line scores say if a 1-1-1, and it tells you that a 1-1-1 must be derived legitimately before it is the best line score. It can't be taken out of a filly just broke away from the gate and put everybody away by the second call and everybody else died and won a wire-to-wire job. It has to be a legitimately contested race in which the horse has a 1-1-1. But that was worth 501 points. Now what is 501? That is 50.1% of the time. That tells you that in thousands, 14,800, which when we derived this, across the United States and Canada, the horses with a legitimate score of 1-1-1 win 50.10% of the races. A horse with a 1-1-2 wins 43% of the races. Now you're not going to get a 1-1-1 and a 1-1-2 in the same line score. A 1-1-X, 38.4% of the races by itself. A 1-2-2, 36% of the races. A 1-2-X, 33% of the races. A 2-2-2 wins 34% of the races. So in any race in which you have a legitimate 1-1-1 and a 2-2-2, your chance of winning that race is 50 plus 34, which is 84% of the time. We said knock off 12.12 for the fact that you may be dreaming or may have made some mistakes or the fact that the dust doesn't, the coefficient of correlation is never 100%, knock off 12. And instead of 83, you've got 71% chance of winning with that combination of line scores in your top two. And it was very well, I thought, clearly demarked. Okay. Older people,
that said, hey, if you don't want to take risks, don't bet any race in which your line scores don't give you a 65% chance of winning, then you will not be taking the chances on the kind of races that are not playable. Now, this was our version of what has later become, you know, make your own morning line and don't bet unless there's value. We knew going in that you had with that race, even with the possible coefficient of error, a 73% chance of winning the race, 71% chance of winning. Combinations, other combinations of 2x, 30, and if you had that with a 1-1-1, you'd only have 80% chance, knock 12 off of that, you got 68%. Each one of these line scores gave people a projected analysis of how they would do in the race. And it did not, it said that if 1, 2, 2, 2, or 3, didn't matter where the 3 was, or where the 1 was, or where the 2 or 4 was, or whatever, that was the way you could make, Tom Brohammer did, he seized upon that and said, hey, these scores are altered by the way the track runs. These scores are altered by that which is winning at that track in relationship to those three categories of early, sustained, and factor W. And he refined the line scores. That is what we call the Brohammer model. But for those who are having trouble making correct Brohammer model, go back for a while to the line scores. And don't be ignoring these ones and twos, even though his model, my model, Tom's model, Kowski's or Dick's might say, the one in your horse's case is in the wrong place. It should be here. Concentrate and go over your races and check the line scores on those races and see, irrespective of your ability to make a good model, what you would have done. Start, in other words, from scratch. Here's the problem we have. It's most prevalent, unfortunately, with those who get together with others who are using the method. It's even worse when we have no contact with it. Some guy's using it, he's miles ahead of the other fellow, and he's got one thing showing, and it makes the other person feel totally intimidated. His model is winning every time, and the other person's model is not. But that other person would just go back to the basics, back to the line scores, until he can make a correct Brohammer model. He will still be miles ahead. So don't ignore the basics. The line scores are still very important. Remember, that's the source of the Brohammer model. Once you get that down pat, you'll find that your model will come, that your ability to make a model that jives with the best of us will be far more accurate. Any questions on the line scores as a precursor of the Brohammer model?
Yes, sir. You know, in the yellow book, as you call it, when you're adding up to 1-1-1, you give it a numerical value, and you actually give it a numerical value, and you add them up and say you were under 240, you should forget the race.
Right. That's for conservatives. Those who don't want to risk. In other words, if you go to a class with Mitchell or Kramer, they're going to make you a morning line based on their handicapping features. And they're going to say, if you don't get a horse that's a value horse, pass the race. This is just a way of using our methodology, what your chances of winning the race is, based on a great number of years of statistics.
And your line scores are going to apply to synergism, phase three, all the, look at them all the same.
Sure. The only problem with synergism is that, A, anybody who bought synergism who was not winning with phase three or was not doing it on my recommendation. It was plainly and clearly stated as advanced phase three, and we gave long lectures. I remember one of Dick gave telling, and Purdy even got up here, who desperately was proud of what he had done. He even got up and said, if you can't use phase three, if you can't understand it, can't interpret what early pace, sustained pace, and double means, you are not ready for synergism. So when you get synergism, you're going to have a lot of ties in government. And I'm going to show you later on this afternoon how to break those ties in W by using your dream race that synergism provides.
Shouldn't you use turn time in the model?
I mean,
if it's running sustained, it's weighted towards sustained. If it's running, I mean, if you're putting early as the criteria, it's weighted towards early.
Yeah, but note what you're sorting on.
Oh.
Now put it. It's number four, turn time, and maybe put a little S for the sustained. That way, when you change your sort, you'll know that. It's not really an optimum thing to model. Because it is a variable. But if you just know what you're sorting on, and usually it's pretty obvious. You look over there and, you know, last 10 races have been run by a sustained pace, you're pretty sure to be sorting on sustained. But I always just note it. But it's a 1-1-2-1, and then I'll put a little S in there.
If you're sorting on W only, then fine, then put it in your mug.
Well, one thing I've been doing is sorting on W and then sorting on early and getting two different turn time figures
right.
Putting them in.
That's probably it's a variable.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could just rerun the race with synergism without reading
what it works.
I wrote down somebody wrote a phrase about our methods, and I loved it. It's called the stochastic optimization.
Explain that.
I just wrote down somebody was. I guess they were
right. Almost.
Stochastic means that a whole lot of variables are involved. It's not fixed. It's all.
Kramer uses.
We're optimizing something in stochastic, which is a lot of variables.
Sounds like something from a PhD thesis.
Oh, I love it. I didn't do it. It wasn't me. But I wrote it down, so I found no code.
Mark Kramer might have
said that. He might have done that. Yeah. It wasn't Mitchell, I know.
Zimba talked about stochastic
a lot. Yeah, it might have been Zimba. I did a seminar with him up in Reno and one in Vancouver. He might have said that, stochastic optimism. Although Zimba lives in such a different world, I don't think he knows what the other speakers on the podium are saying when he's there. He listens only his own voice. He's a nice fellow, lovely child. Very pretty wife. Any other questions on the line school? Those of you who don't feel you're sophisticated enough to make a proper Brouwer model, go back to that. I'm telling you not because it's a recommendation, it's because of what I did. I did that. I went back to that and I said, boy, you are blowing a lot of races because you think you know what's going to win and you're overlooking ones and twos.
What I did recently, I was going to take the race on five horses. Then I put another synergy in that. So then I took a sheet and I put the first, second, third calls that I got done pronouncing on page three. And then usually when I start the first call, I put the top, and that was my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then the others, I line up and put up a